No, thank you very much for having me, guys. So I started at Mrs. Gann said in 2015, and at that point I was still swimming at the Oshelman pool here. And then eventually, not long after that, I moved to the Bondi pool. And was swimming maybe 8 times a week. And I was, I guess, at that point still just competing at like a state level. Not really, at that point I wasn't good enough for national level. I hadn't qualified for nationals yet. Definitely kept busy with swimming and then also school. And then later on, in year 11 and 12, I decided to do ATAR. So I did PE studies, English, chemistry, applications, and economics. I was doing that as well as swimming in Bunbury. So I definitely kept me pretty busy, and I was training 8 times a week and then also doing 2 gym sessions. So yeah, I was very busy at the time and just enjoyed, I guess, being able to have a student plus athlete life as well.
Busy time. I remember Carl coming to class and he was training 2 sessions a day. You were coming and you're still managing to do your study, you were going straight from school to your swimming. It was a really heavy time. So then after that time, Carl, when you first left school, what did you do then?
So leaving school, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew that swimming was my main focus and something that I wanted to pursue. So I enjoyed economics at school and decided to do a Bachelor of Commerce, which I'm still doing today, and majoring in accounting and finance. And I think it's been very important to have something that you're not just solely focused on your sport, but you also have something on the side that helps balance you and you're pursuing other areas of your life.
Good. Now, so from school, did you go up to Perth or did you stay?
Yeah, so I moved up to Perth during COVID in 2020. And lived with my auntie at that point. It was quite a big shift, I guess, being with your family the whole time to now living by yourself. But yeah, I haven't looked back, and like the squad that I have there is amazing and absolutely loving it.
Yeah, so then you were going to uni in 2020. When were you looking at, like, your sights at looking at possibly, I suppose it would have been the World Championships and the Commonwealth Games and then the Olympics. How did that work in your program?
Yeah, so the Olympic Games, to qualify, you need to come either 3rd at the World Championships the year before, or top 3, or you have to come the top 30 in the year of the Olympics. The process, the qualification process starts a year out from the Olympics, so 2023. I wasn't fast enough to qualify for the 2023 World Championships in the 10 kilometre, so I didn't have that opportunity. But then 2023, end of 2023, they had Australia start their selection process for the Olympics. So the first competition was actually in Queensland, and you needed to come top 4 to get funded to the next process. And I came 4th in that one, so I just scraped in. It was, at that point, I definitely didn't think I was gonna qualify because I finished maybe 4 minutes behind the top 2 swimmers, and only the top 2 get to go on to try and qualify. So yeah, it's not like I was guaranteed a position or anything, and then only in the World Championships I was fortunate enough to come 9th, so got that.
Now, I know that you swam in February. Whereabouts was that swim? That was pretty chaotic, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that was in February, was where the World Championships were, and those were in Doha. So, just at the top of Africa, and it was a very different swim to what we're used to, because I think everyone knows that the Olympics are up for grabs, so there's a lot of desperation in the swim. Everyone's fighting for those top 13 spots. So it was a lot more physical than the races usually are. But yeah, to come in the top 13 was very special.
Unbelievable. So during your time with training and studying and working, how have you managed to maintain that balance? Because does the government help you financially? Do they help Olympic athletes? Or how do you manage to get that balance?
Yeah, so we're fortunate that if you get a certain position, so I think it's top 20 at a big event, so World Championships or Olympics, you get funding from, I think it's Hancock Prospecting, so they're the ones that actually give you money. So yeah, it's, and that goes a long way in helping for pay rent, pay for food, and also just help, like, paying for, say, lane fees and stuff like that.
Because do you have a sponsor now?
Yes, I'm sponsored by Arena, which is just a swimming brand that makes bathers, caps, goggles, all that sort of stuff. So that also goes a long way in helping me, like, yeah, be able to do what I do.
Because the bathers are expensive, aren't they?
Yeah, so in open water swimming, you're allowed, so pool swimming boys are only allowed to wear bathers that go pretty much the top of their legs, whereas open water swimming you can wear bathers that go from your ankles over your shoulders. So they can cost up to about $800, and they don't last too long, so it can be a very big expense in swimming. And the reason they cost so much is because the fabric they're made of is like hydrophobic, so it repels all the water, and over time it loses that property, but yeah, that's why they're so expensive.
Wow, so how far before the Olympics did you know that you'd been chosen to swim at the Olympics? What was that time frame?
So we, compared to the pool swimmers, they had their trials in, I think it was June, and if they qualify, they only have 3 days to pack and then they fly out. So they're very like last minute and they don't have a lot of time to prepare. Whereas we were lucky having our selection process in February. At least we had probably 4 months to get ready and know like that we were on the team. So yes, we're very lucky in that sense.
Now I wanted to talk about the Olympic Village. What was that like?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Like there's so much there. Like it's its own town really. They have like a dentist, they have their own shops, they have a doctor, they have like there's just so much stuff there, that like a barber, like just anything you needed, it was there. And they give you these like kind of tokens that you can use, and they have vending machines over it, and you can grab like any drinks you want. They have stands that have like burgers and like just anything you need, plus the actual food halls themselves were massive. They had like different kind of cuisines, so they had French, Asian, like pizza, pasta, Italian, like there was anything you really wanted. And we're also lucky because like this was just an Australian thing, but all the athletes from Australia stay in the same kind of hotel, and at the bottom they have a food area where like Australia brought their own nutritionist, and they have like all the Aussie food brands, so like Vegemite and all that sort of stuff, so you still feel at home even while you're away. Like their own barista and everything, so yeah, no, it was pretty awesome. Plus you're amongst some of the best athletes in the world, so it, yeah, like just walking through the food hall and you're seeing gold medalists. Ooh, it was pretty special, yeah.
Wow. Now, I don't know if this is a fact, but I did hear that Australia flew some air conditioners over to their athletes because the rooms weren't air conditioned. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. So another thing, Australia definitely looks after its athletes. So the week before we got there, it was like mid-30s, so it was very hot. And the games, because they're trying to promote a sustainable green game, they didn't provide air conditioning for the athletes. So Australia flew in air conditioners, but they also gave us mattress toppers because the beds were like quite firm. So at least that was another thing they did to help all the athletes.
Wow, amazing. Now, my next question, let me open it up to the class. Is there anyone that would like to ask, diet, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Is there anything anyone would like to ask Kyle at this point? Because if you're a swimmer, and you've got a background in swimming, there might be something that I haven't thought of that you might be interested in asking. So please intervene and put your hand up if there is a question. But obviously diet is a huge part in your training. Can you give us a bit of an idea? Because I think I noticed when we were watching you that you had a little bit of a sip of something. Now I know when you were doing the Rottnest event, or one of the longer events when you were here as a student, you actually told me what was in that drink, and it certainly wasn't just fluid. So share with us what you had in that bottle.
Yeah, so I'm sure you guys have learned about, say, your energy systems and like the three main macronutrients, so carbohydrates, protein, and fats. So when you're exercising at a very high level, the main energy your body, or the main source your body uses for energy, is carbohydrates. So in that drink, you'd have stuff like Gatorade, gel shots, and electrolytes, because those are the main things that your body... So your body loses electrolytes when you're sweating, and it needs carbohydrates because that's what you're burning while you swim. So if you were to have, I don't know, say steak while you swim, it would take so long for your body to process that that you wouldn't get any benefit. Whereas if you have something like Gatorade or gel shots, which are pretty much just sugar, your body can process that within about 20 minutes or so. So it's very important that throughout the race, I think I had three, they're called feeds, so I had three feeds throughout the race. And that just tops up your energy stores so you don't finish the race on a low.
Okay, so leading up to your race, I think you raced on a, was it Friday?
A Friday, Friday. Yes.
So that week leading up, can you share with us what you actually ate leading up to the Friday of competition?
Yeah. So, like, as an athlete, the main thing you prioritise is carbohydrate intake. So that's stuff like your pasta, potatoes, any food that's really white. That's very important because that's the main thing that your body uses for energy when you compete. Also, like, ate a lot of, say, steak and chicken and that, because that's what your body uses to help repair your muscles and grow stronger. And then fat is also important because that's what your body needs for just everyday use. When you're not exercising, like, that's what your body's using to keep you awake in that. So leading up, like, one thing that a lot of athletes do is called, like, carbohydrate loading. So a day or two out, don't eat as much, say, protein and veggies and that, and definitely increased stuff like pasta, potatoes, and just, yeah, you try and maximize that because your body can store that in your muscles for like a day before you race, and then, yeah, that's very important for longer events over an hour or so.
And the day off?
Day off, I'm not usually too hungry in the morning, so I just try to have something light, like toast or cereal, just something small. And then also make sure that I'm drinking electrolytes just to stay hydrated. And then, yes, that's when, like, I'll have my feeds during the race as well.
So as I noticed when you came up to stand on the starting line, you got an excellent start.
Yes.
You swam underwater for, I don't know, 10, 15 metres. Is there a rule with how long you can swim underwater for before you come up?
No, so yeah, in open water there's a lot less rules compared to pool swimming. So pool swimming, you're only allowed to be underwater for 15 metres from your dive or any turn. Whereas open water, there's no restrictions on that. You can swim any stroke. So you'd notice when people go for their feed, a lot of them will do backstrokes. So they're still moving while they're drinking the fluid. And then also a massive thing in open water is drafting. So you can save up to, I don't know what the statistic is, maybe I feel 30% or something, just by sitting behind a swimmer. And it makes an even bigger difference when you're going into a current. Because in our race, you could see that a lot of the swimmers, they stuck to the side of the river, just because down the centre the current was so strong. I think the current was moving at, say, 0.7 metres per second. And we swim roughly 1.5 metres per second. So swimming against it, you're swimming half as fast as you usually would. But it means that when you're going with it, you're swimming double the speed you almost do. So, yeah, it was a very interesting race, and we haven't had one like that before.
So there was so much publicity about the river being polluted. How was it swimming in the river?
Yeah, so they tested for E. coli, which is, like... I guess what makes you sick, and those levels have to be below 500 for it to be considered safe. And when we raced, it was 200, so it was well within the safety limit. And I didn't see anything, or it didn't stink or anything like that. But when the triathletes, they raced earlier in the week, I think it was 1,000. So I heard of a few triathletes getting quite sick. Yeah, it was, a lot of it depended on rainfall, because in Paris, all their drainage system leads into the Seine. So when it rains, they have a lot of problems with water quality, but we were fortunate that when we raced, it was sunny, so.
Now, the other thing is a lot of athletes have a performance routine leading up to when they actually take off, helping them to focus. What was your performance routine, or were there little things that you do before a race that you consistently do to be able to help you focus?
Yeah, I mean, I have the same like activation routine that I do before training and before every competition. And like you said, that just helps you get into the zone and also helps your body wake up and know that it's like it's race time. So yeah, it's just important to, like, in that routine, I'll do stuff that helps get my heart rate up. And then also a bit of stretching to help, like, loosen up my muscles.
Were you able to do a warm-up in a pool before you got into the river, or...?
No, they, if you wanted to, you could swim in the river before. I didn't. I just did, like, a lot of dry land activation. But yes, they didn't have a pool or anything near it.
Yeah. So, are there any questions from anyone at this point? Because Carl probably needs a drink of water now. You've been talking for about 25 minutes. Oh, here we are. We've got someone.
Yep. While you were in the village, were you still able to, like, train in a pool, or were you, like, completely on rest until race day?
No, so we, good question. So when we fly into Paris, you usually fly into what's called a staging camp. So you fly into a place that is, I guess, away from where you're going to be racing. So we stayed in a place called Chartres, which is an hour outside of the village. And there they had like a pool, a gym, like everything we needed. And we stayed there for a week before we went into the village. And we only went into the village, I think it was 4 or 5 days before we raced. And they don't have a pool at the village, but they have pools. We actually trained at the pool where they had the 1924 Olympics.
Wow.
And they have buses going 24/7. So yeah, you just catch a bus to the pool and then you catch it back. But we do definitely have, like, we taper off when we race. So say we'd be swimming 70, 80 Ks a week when we're in training. As 2 weeks out, it might drop to like 50. And then the week of it might be like 20. So we definitely don't train as much needing it, but it's still important to be in the water and have a connection with the water.
Yeah. What time of day did you swim?
So we raced at 7:30 in the morning.
Right, so what was your meal after the event?
Yeah, so the main thing to prioritise after a race is carbohydrates, because that's what your body's depleted of. That's what it's been using the whole race. So I think I had, immediately after, I actually had Coke, because that was to help, like, to help with the not get sick or anything.
Yeah.
Plus it had sugar, which was carbohydrates. So I had that, and then I went back and had some pasta. And then it's also important to have protein, because that's what's going to help your muscles to repair. So,
yeah. And how did you recover the next day? What did you do? Like, how many days were you in France until you had to leave? Because I heard that once you've done your event, you're only allowed to stay in the village for 2 days. And
yes.
Then it's like, right, off you go.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So after you competed, because they only had a certain amount of accommodation for the athletes, you had 2 days to leave the village. But we were fortunate that we were at the end, so we never had to leave the village before the closing ceremony.
Oh, so
yeah.
You got to go to the closing ceremony.
Yes, we got to go to the closing ceremony.
Wow.
But yeah, you also, as an athlete, you get given one ticket per day to another event. So the last 2 days, we went and watched the athletics, which was pretty cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
And tell us about the closing ceremony, because the opening ceremony had a lot of contention because it was that all the athletes came up on the individual boats, which I thought was a unique idea.
Yes.
And sort of very French, but lots of people didn't like that. The closing ceremony was traditional, coming into the stadium. How did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was very good. I mean, obviously everyone's finished racing and that, so everyone's just enjoying themselves and having a good time. Whereas, like you say, the opening ceremony, everyone's like very focused. They've got their race coming up. So it was great to mingle with a lot of the other athletes and, yeah, just be around and enjoy, like, be amongst the other athletes.
And what other athletes did you manage to meet while you were over there, which, you know, you're sort of hoping to maybe, you know, touch base with?
Yeah, well, I was really hoping to meet the USA basketball team in the village, but I was very sad because my sister didn't even stay in the village and they stayed, like, right next to them.
Oh.
So they didn't stay in the village during that time. So she, like, saw them every day.
Oh.
But I met Patty Mills, which is pretty cool. He was very friendly. But because you're in the same hotel, like you just see a lot of the Olympians every day. So like you'll just be walking around and like you see Jess Fox or just a lot of like top level athletes, and they're just normal people. You like you start to realise that they're like you or me.
So when you left the village, what did you do after that?
So I was very fortunate. I had 2 weeks off in Europe. So I just spent some time with my family in south of France for a bit, and then visited my other family in the UK. And then I spent a week in Germany with one of my friends. So he's actually someone I've met through swimming. So it was nice to have some downtime.
So now you're back and you were saying that you're having some time off. And then what?
Yeah, so I'm having a month off after the game, so I'll be back in training next week. And there's actually a World Cup in Hong Kong, I think, next month. Not sure if I'll go to that because like I've just come off a break and it's very soon. Other than that, it would be in Nationals in January. They have the next qualification process for the World Championships in Singapore next year, so that's what we're training for now.
And whereabouts would that be?
That
Singapore.
Yeah, I don't actually know which part of Singapore it will be. They'll have it at a beach somewhere, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know where they'll have it.
Yeah. And one other question: when you were going into your swim in France, what was your game plan? Like you, I saw you. Were you number six or number three?
Number three.
Number three.
The Australian was number
so
six.
What was your game plan? Because you would have talked to your coach about it. What did you sort of work out for that?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, open water is very different to pool swimming, where, say, swimming in the pool, you can have a set race plan. Like, you know the conditions every time, the water's set at the same temperature, like, everything's the same. Whereas, there's so many variables in open water, such as we had a very strong current, which we've never had before. So I never have like a set race plan that I want to be in this position at this time. It's more of just like a general, say, I knew that I wanted to try and draft as much going into the current because that's where like I could save the most energy. So we knew that going around the cairns would be very tough at the far end because like a lot of swimmers, you'd overshoot the cairn and then you have to swim extra to make that distance back. So it was trying to, I guess the main things that we focused on was drafty as much going into the current, and then also on the cairns on the far side, making sure that like you put in a bit more effort to, I guess, get across as soon as possible.
Yeah. So in every sport, you always know the people that are above you and that are ahead of you and that you've got your eye on. Who would they be for you? Who are they, like, who would you like to sort of work towards to try and...
Yeah, yeah, so... open water is very, like, a lot of the European swimmers are the best in the world. So Germany, Hungary, and Italy are probably, like, some of the best nations for open water swimming. And two Hungarians got on the podium, so they're very strong. Yeah, Krzysztof Rozalski was the guy that won the 10-kilometre. So, yeah, I mean, if I could get anywhere near him, I'd be pretty happy.
Why do you think they're so strong in this event?
I think because in Europe they have a lot of, like, say, open water races, and because you're so close in Europe, you get to verse a lot of the best swimmers all the time. And I think just having that level of competition where you're versing the best all the time makes you better. So I think, yeah, that's a part of it. They also, a lot of them do high altitude training, which I'm not saying that's a reason they're better, but it could be something that can help them as well. They've just got access to, obviously they've got mountains that they can train at and have access to that. So.
So with you having a month off, does that mean absolutely no exercise at all? Because that would be hard going from, you know, your taper of 20Ks, you know, leading up to the event. What are you doing in this month off? Because I can't imagine you busy still.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not exercise as such, like I'm going to the pool or anything, but still just being on the move, like in when I was with my friend in Germany, we climbed the highest mountain in Germany, so that was quite cool. But yeah, like it's not been any strict exercise, like going to the gym, going to the pool, anything. It's just been keeping your body moving, going to the beach, surfing, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That just keeps you active.
Yeah, good. So you've got a month and then you'll start back in Perth swimming. And what sort of distances are you looking at when you first start up again?
Yeah, so we'll start off, I think, only 6 sessions a week, swimming for an hour, and then also 3 gym on top of that. So it'll just be a gradual build where hopefully we'll get to maybe 9 or 10 swim sessions for 2 hours, and then we also usually do 3 gyms. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing, recovery. If you're swimming, you know, whatever session, 6 to 9 a week, and you're going to uni and you've got a part-time job, and you're going to the gym, how do you manage to recover to be able to go to go and work and go to uni? That would be tough.
Yeah, so probably the main things with recovery are probably hydration and sleep are like the 2 biggest ones, and also nutrition. So those are probably the 3 biggest things that can make a difference to recovery. I know there's a lot put on stuff like ice baths and like Normatec recovery boots or stuff like that. But the main things that help your recovery are getting a good night's sleep, so 8 hours at least. Ideally, I think for an athlete, they want you to get about 10 hours. And then staying hydrated and eating well. So not just eating well throughout the day, but also around sessions. So staying fueled throughout sessions, so stuff like Gatorade and that can keep you hydrated. And then after sessions, also making sure that you have something, even if it's just like a banana or something that can help you recover immediately after the session.
So do you cook?
Yes. So since moving up to Perth, I've had to learn how to cook, and yeah, it's been a big wake-up call, like living on your own. But yeah, like, I don't eat anything fancy. Like often dinner would just be pasta, steak, and then some veggies. So like I said, trying to hit those main like carbohydrates, protein, and then fats as well.
Yeah, good. All right, any more questions? Anything that you'd like to add to that? For students that are sitting here and they've got their, you know, goals in mind, when you were one of these students, is that what you were thinking of? You know, when you were training twice a day, were you thinking, oh, I'd like to go to the Olympics? Was that in the back of your mind?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, in our family, the Olympics have always been a special thing where, like, the TV doesn't go off for 2 weeks, and regardless of what sport it is, like, we just love to watch it. So it's always been something I've dreamed of going to. I didn't know that I would get there. But yeah, I think as long as you focus on progress over perfection, like, and you just strive to be a bit better each day rather than being perfect, then yeah, you'll go a lot further than what you can expect.
Well, one thing I do remember about you, Carl, is that you're a hard worker and you're very humble. And you never thought that you were better than what you were, and that's obviously held you in good stead. So I'd like to thank you for coming along today to have our chat. I'd like everyone to show their appreciation for Carl coming today.